We're going to call the meeting. Looks like we have a quorum with four members here. And I'd like everyone take a look at your folder. There's I want everyone to refer to the 2009-2010 procedure in your folder. This one specific timeliness for the meeting, so considering it was 4 minutes late. Your absences have to be through either Ursula or Kate. But considering this is a hard meeting, because most of the members are at home already, we'll be flexible on that. Then there's a 24-hour rule amendment in your handout. But the chair will also give discretion, because sometimes we go on the fly in this committee as well. So, you know, this is very political committee, but not partisan. As long as we're not playing some games with our amendment, I think it'll be fine. Your hearing requests will have to be through Kate. And I want the authors to make sure that their witnesses are here. No laptops or cell phones. Want you to go back and review the committee procedures by yourself later on. There's going to be a quiz. And then the expectations for the hearings for your bill, it's the same as last year. This is more for the lobbyists and the hired guns out there. We're going to give the same amount of time for the opponent and proponent. And you could decide what to do with that. The chair will meet with you before the couple of days before the hearing and said, well, you guys got a certain amount of time. You can use it however you want. With that being said, the chair also wants the group to work together to come to some kind of resolution when the hearings take place. If not, the committee will give you a resolution you might or might not like. So, we might end up having some meetings in the evening instead of a Friday, so to give some of the rural members, outstate Minnesota members, an opportunity to go home. So, but I will work with all the members to make sure that everyone's on board before we have those weekend evening meetings. If not, then we'll stick to the Friday morning. But the Friday morning, we might, if we're going to continue, I'm contemplating of moving up to 9, so folks would have time to get here and I could take my daughters to school. In your handout, there is a two pieces of paper talking about chapter 214, and I want the members to look at it, you know, and we could have discussion on it on this today later on. After the overview, what we're going to do is we're going to give an overview of kind of, Ms. Abe has prepared some overview, a small short overview of differences between certification, licensure, and registry, I believe. And you could ask questions after. Why don't we do this? We're going to do both overviews, and Ms. A is going to do the overview, and then followed by Randy Snyder from the Council of Health Board. After the overviews, why don't you hold your questions until after all the overviews, because they might overlap. We could do the questions from the members. Okay? So, Ms. A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to just give a very brief overview of the Health Licensing Board and the statutes. Minnesota statutes provide for 17 health-related licensing boards. They are listed in statute. And even though there are 17 boards, some of the boards regulate more than one profession. For example, the Board of Optometry regulates the optometrist. They oversee their practice act. The Board of Medical Practice has physicians, physician assistants, acupuncture practitioners, a whole list of people. So it varies by health-related licensing boards who they're going to regulate. And they're listed in their statutes. I think Kate provided a list that I had made up that covers, I think, most all of the boards and the professions that they license. Chapter 214 is the overarching statute that discusses the health licensing boards as a whole and their procedures and the state policy and regulation for the licensure of occupations. Each of the occupations has their own practice act, and I think that's what the committee is most used to dealing with, is amendments and changes to practice acts. Not a whole lot of attention has been paid to amending Chapter 415, the examining boards and licensing statutes. Basically, the licensing statute sets out the legislative purpose of licensing in Minnesota. And basically, that is to protect the health and safety of the citizens of the state. And there are only specified circumstances under which the legislature feels that licensure is appropriate. And those reasons are listed in statute. And they're briefly listed in the short subject that was included in your packet. This statute also discusses what proponents of new or expanded regulation are to do when they're proposing regulation. It says that within 15 days of the time a bill is introduced, the proponents of the legislation are to have a report, and the elements of the report are listed in statute, are to be submitted to the Standing Committee of the House and the Senate, and to the Council of Health Boards. And Mr. Snyder will be talking a little bit about the purpose of the Council of Health Boards and what they do and the reports that they generate. In my experience in seeing some of those reports, they're very thorough, lengthy reports, and there is a real process that is done to evaluate all the information that's provided. The statute does not say what happens once the reports are given to the chairs of the standing committee. They have to be given to them. The chairs of the standing committee can request that the Council of Health Boards do a full review. The Council of Health Boards, it's my understanding, does not have to do a full review unless they're requested to by a member of the legislature. I'm sure Mr. Snyder can answer questions about that process and what the impact on their group would be if they were to automatically review every proposal that came across their desk, if we were to amend the statute to say we want to have this review done. That's a real basic overview of what 214 says, what the responsibilities of the legislature and the proponents are. There's a House Research short subject and then a longer publication on the discipline of health professionals. It's interesting, but it's pretty detailed. And we don't deal a whole lot with discipline statutes unless we're really looking at some change and in comparing how the disciplinary statutes operate across different licensing boards. So if you have any questions or if there are any topics of interest that you would like me to do more research on, let me know. I'll be happy to help.
Ms. Ayes, can you, I know you went through this last year and you have returning members. Can you just kind of briefly go through the, the definitions of licensure, registration, certification, process?
I looked over that.
Thank you.
That. There really are two levels of regulation in Minnesota. There is licensure, which is the most restrictive level, and then there's registration. There is a certification, but that's not defined in statute that I could find. A lot of the certifications are national certifications. There are some professions other than the health occupations that have certification. A lot of health occupations, there is a certified in the name, but that's usually a national certification or a certification from a particular national organization. So registration, that would be what the naturopaths are doing for the next year, or starting soon. I'm trying to think who else is registered. Respiratory therapist, okay. Nurses are licensed, even though they're called registered. But licensure, we deal most often with licensure, I think, in this community because it is the most strictly regulated. And I know there are states that also have certification. There are three levels of licensure, and I have heard that there may be some proposals out there for Minnesota to make that change, to add an additional level of regulation.
Sure. And Representative Byrne.
Mr. Chair, if we could please ask her to define the key distinctions between the three things in terms of how we, you know, who can practice or what's required if they practice.
Ms. Davis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Byrne, individuals that are licensed, typically there is a level of education and training and skill that they must demonstrate. They're the only ones that are allowed to use certain titles and names. It is illegal for other people to practice that profession if there is licensure in the state. With registration, there's often the title protection where only people that are registered can use the term registered blank, but other people can practice and use those skills as long as they don't call themselves by those protected titles.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mr. Snyder. Mr. Snyder, just I guess give an overview of what you guys do and maybe discuss a little bit about, I don't know, some of the work you've done. For example, how many have been requested and what you guys do when it is requested.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. With me is Shirley Breck, and she said, she whispered in my ear as we came up and said, because I have history, I'll come up with you. I won't add the other part, but she's older history. So anyway, she's a valuable colleague. Shirley is the executive director of the Board of Nurses and Board of Nursing and does an extraordinary job and does have a lot of history on a national level and with us in the state and a valued colleague. I am the executive director of the Board of Examiners for Nursing Home Administrators, and they are also the lead agency for the Administrative Services Unit, and I thought I would just sort of go over a global perspective on how health licensing is set up in the state. The Administrative Services Unit is indeed the business office structure for all of the 17 health licensing boards. So we are autonomous state agencies, but we have a business office that does all the common approaches to regular business functioning. So they do HR and the IT, all the accounting, the payroll, all of those aspects together. So we've been sort of coordinating those roles for since 1993, so quite a bit of time. A subset of that is this Council of Health Boards. And that is really just an add-on task that was given to us, and we gladly accepted it just to provide a service to you as the legislature. And it's really only upon your request that that group gets together. That was for any occupation review program that was an emerging occupation or those seeking a change in the scope of practice. I did email this to the committee administrator. This is our manual, and I think this would answer all your questions. Kate, I believe, just said that she didn't receive it or whatever. Or
yeah, I didn't get your email, and then I realized that I didn't realize it until last night.
Okay. I apologize for that.
Mr. Snyder, we'll make sure all the members will get that.
And this is a valuable tool that we provide the emerging occupation. It really lifts out the entire process. It was developed back when the Council of Health Boards was created. A quick overview, though, of health occupational licensing, and excellent job, just the summary that was previously given. There are 17 health licensing boards in the state. That's fewer than more states. The two that get a lot of press are the Board of Medical Practice and the 104,000 nurses that are licensed in the state of Minnesota to practice nursing in the state. These are 17 independent agencies, as I said. They're governed by the citizens. So each board has any range from 7 to 20 individuals that are appointed by the governor to represent a distinct aspect of their appointment. It might be a nonprofit community or an LPN or a naturopath or whatever it might be. The governor appoints all those individuals through the open appointment process through the Secretary of State. The funding for our boards is entirely special revenue funds. There are no general fund dollars, and in today's world that we sleep a little better with that regard. But the special revenue fund is its own animal. We finance our entire our operation expense must be covered by our fees. So we establish fees through you, the legislative body. We then seek spending authority to seek permission to spend our fees through you, the legislature. And then we are required to manage not to exceed that spending authority. So fees are set. We get our spending authority not to exceed this amount, and then we manage to that level. That always leaves, just by that analogy, that always leaves a little bit of extra money there. You can't spend every single dollar, so we do sometimes build up a little bit of money in that special revenue fund. Again, there are no general fund dollars that are allocated to the health licensing boards. We also support two general funded boards. They saw the wisdom of having this common business office and support services so they can focus just on the discipline of their profession. And those are the boards of a board of barbers and cosmetology. They came over a couple years ago, and then the Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board, those individuals that regulate EMTs and first responders. They are co-located with us. We provide that same service, and it's lowered the cost for all of us. So we've looked at that model for quite some time. Again, it's a common business office that functions through the Administrative Services Unit, which I manage, and that's the accounting, finance, human resources, contracting, purchasing, IT, and we've been doing that since 1993, a fairly effective model. That leads us then to the Council of Health Boards. In 2001, from the Senate side, they desired to formalize the review process for occupations, and they asked us, as the 17 deemed subject matter experts in the state, would we do a review if we were asked? And we've done reviews up to that point. We would certainly assist any legislator that asked us to help. But the Senate desired to formalize that review process and came up with the Council of Health Boards. It's just more or less naming that these boards exist. The executive director, along with the chair of the board, serve on the Council of Health Boards. And they gave us this legislative authority to clarify issues for you upon your request, any licensing issue that came forward. Again, for new occupations, anything that would fit under Chapter 214, I understand there's a concern if that's all occupations are just health-related. We have only reviewed our health related occupations.
Mr. Snyder, in your work with the board has not been directed to make any recommendations.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And that was crystal clear from the beginning, because there was a former process in the late 80s that the Minnesota Department of Health had a process where they gave a thumbs up or a thumbs down on the proposal. And I believe the legislature felt that their power authority was usurped by that. And that process stopped with the Department of Health. So we have been real diligent in making sure that we just try to define the questions better for you to ask in public testimony, and we try to create questions and get it down to a basic package that citizens in the state could understand, and for you to be able to ask. So we do not make a final recommendation. And again, we only work for you. We receive the proposals. Some people, some occupations send us the proposals. Others, we merely wait until we hear from the standing or the chair of either house. And I think the licensing chair, Representative Powell, you have been given that authority to send those to us as well. So with that, I guess it was more or less the council was created to create a standard process. I wish you had this because this gives a greater detail, gets into the six areas that the Pew Commission, the Institute of Medicine looked at. We have about 150 questions. It can be overwhelming, I would think, if you got this. However, if you are a new occupation, eventually you will need to answer these questions for create your statute and the rules. Things on safety and efficacy, other regulations that might have covered your practice, are there other defining the occupation? So it's a fairly extensive list trying to clarify the issue better for you, the legislature. We have also in this form that you didn't get, we have done seven occupational reviews so far. They are fairly intensive. We try to do the best job we can. Again, this is sort of the miscellaneous job description component. It's on the bottom of our task list sometimes, but we do try to put these together in 3 to 4 subcommittees. Each review would take 3 boards. We try to get a mix of boards. If it's a physical science issue, if it's clinical in nature, we'll try to bring in the Board of Social Workers, veterinarian medicine or something to balance that proposal to get a good cross-section of individuals to review that. Typically, we do a review in 3 to 4 subcommittees. It's open. It's fully public. Try to be as transparent, as fully open as we can. And then we write up the final summary in front of the entire council health board, so all 15 boards are there, and then we submit that report to you. And that's, in essence, the process. Is that what you wanted from us, Representative
Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good morning.
Good morning.
I just want to clarify one point, Mr. Snyder. You said that you've done 7 occupational reviews. Is that since the inception in 2001?
Correct.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Can
you give us an example of one of those 7 reviews, please?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the 7, I'll just name them. From 2002 was our first request. That was a massage therapist and oriental bodywork therapist. The second one was an advanced scope of practice issue for optometrists. I believe that was a controlled substance issue. The third one was licensure of speech language pathologists, which were currently registered. Fourth one was licensure of dental assistants, denturists. A lot of states license people that manufacture denturists. It was a new term I was unfamiliar with until it came forward, but that came before the council. Naturopathic doctors, that was 2 years ago, and I believe that they're back or at the following year that something was enacted on that. And then the last one was athletic trainers. In 2007.
Very good. Representative
Murphy. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one follow-up question. In reviewing the questions, and you're more familiar with these, of course, than I, but I am wondering, since 2001, if you think the questions that you're being asked to answer are current, if you would have advice for us at all about these questions, if there are any that you think are redundant, not necessary, if you think these are the right set of questions to get us the information that we need to make a determination about licensure, et cetera.
Mr. Snyder.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, we have reviewed this, the actual questions in detail. The regulations have been there. The subset that you see, those 10 points that were mentioned before, have been there forever, and I think they're big global questions that are probably okay. The manual procedures have been updated, excuse me, a couple of times. We've tried various models to score these. How do you evaluate it? How do we give you back a little bit better direction? And we understand the challenge for you. How do you get this back in some form that you can use? And that's why we're open to any recommendation you would have. This should be a tool for you. We're willing to modify this in any way that we can. It's really a tool for you to use for your benefit. Does that answer that, Representative?
Yes, thank you.
Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Snyder, just a clarification on terms of questions. In the 214.02, there's 11 questions that the applicant needs to do for the report. But to be clear, what I'm hearing from Mr. Snyder and the council is they developed their own set of more detailed 150 or so questions. And my question has to do with that. When you developed your manual and the 150 more detailed questions for them to respond to, for you to do your review, was there interaction between yourself and the legislator or legislative staff in the development of that initially?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, yes. Initially, we worked on the Senate side more. This was an initiative that came from that side. I believe it was also modeled after Virginia Occupational Health Program. They had a review process similar, and I believe that is where that came from. The first 3 years, we wanted to make sure that this tool was of value, and we also asked for feedback from the Senate. The author at that time to see if it was of value, and we heard back it was. Now, faces change and interpretations change, so it is good that we're revisiting this because, again, it should be of value to you or it can go away. It does cost money and it takes time, so it should be of value.
Mm-hmm. Follow up, Representative?
This is another follow-up, another question. You mentioned we have 17 boards. They oversee multiple occupations, 47. You, I think, mentioned offhand that this is a lesser number than other states. Was that the 17 to lesser? What is that number? Let me be more specific. The 47 health-related occupations that are licensed or regulated, let's say, is that, in your knowledge, more or less than the other 56 states, or where would we rank?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, I was a little bit surprised to see 47 occupations. I'll have to go back and look at all that detail. The number of boards is less than many of our counterparts, that they have more separation and actually more silos, and I think we've worked hard to look at how do we share expense and how do we collaborate better in Minnesota. More states, about a third of the states have similar models to us that have the autonomous boards, but we've taken it that step better to do the shared cost and the shared expertise with each other and more collaboratively.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Representative.
State your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Shirley Brecken, and I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Nursing. To answer your question, Representative Bund, an example that I give you is that there are health occupations that are licensed in many other states, and some of those might be surgical technologists, medical assistants. For instance, North Dakota licenses medical assistants, and Minnesota does not. I just historically or traditionally would tell you that I believe that Minnesota licenses fewer health occupations than other states do. However, in some instances, as Ms. Abbs has shared with you, they may be registered and not licensed in the state. And an example of that would be the respiratory therapists. They're licensed in North Dakota. They're registered in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, I would also mention assisted living administrators. 47 states have a requirement, and Minnesota is one of three that does not. And that's sort of in my domain.
Right. Representative Bunn, here. Through?
I have others, but it's
others. We'll go to Representative Norton, and then we'll come back to Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still kind of grappling with some of this. First, it sounds like these reports perhaps are a little large and complicated, but I think it would be beneficial if I could see one. So if I could, because I don't know what they look like, and I think it would help me understand a little bit more about how these decisions are made, and so if I could just get a copy of one, it doesn't have to be any particular one, but that would be useful. And it sounded as if the Minnesota Council of Health Boards, Mr. Chair, I've just got a couple that I'll run together here if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Perhaps talk to groups who are considering asking or looking into licensure. Did I misunderstand that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, actually, we really stay away from that. We work for the legislature.
Representative Norton, I believe the intention of the board is they will work on a request. And so, for example, Group A wants to license themselves, and they go through the process. If we don't call on the board, nothing will get done. If we call on the board to convene and to go through the process, then they will convene and go through the process.
I understand, Mr. Chair. I just thought I heard him say something earlier that indicated he had talked with these groups prior to, so I was just clarifying that because I wanted to make sure I had the correct information.
Could I further, Mr. Chair? Further clear, Representative Norton. If someone requests this review document, we certainly provide that to them. But we make it crystal clear to them that we work, if the report can only be the chair of the either house to request our formal work.
Thank you very much. And if someone, and I don't care who answers it, can help me understand, as I look at your list, many of these, of course, are all in the medical area. Some of them fall under Board of Medical Practices, and others are standalone. Could you help me decide how is that decided that a group falls under the Board of Medical Practice as opposed to a standalone board? Is that at the request of
Ms. Ace?
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, the 17 standalone boards are statutorily defined.
At their request at the time of the hearing, or I guess I'm wondering how that was determined.
These reports that have been standing for perhaps years, as far as I know. I think the most recent board was the Office of Uncomplimentary and Unlicensed Health Practices. I think that's what it's called. But that's administered by the Department of Health. Generally, a new regulation falls under one of the other boards. And that could be strictly cost, that it's less cost to have another board administer. I don't know the strategy for that.
And, Mr. Chair, that's exactly what I was getting to with my question is, for instance, a registered naturopath doctors, which we've had some discussion in recent years, that falls under the Board of Medical Practices. And as I was looking at a number of boards and considering, even though they're special areas, and I do understand reserves. I recall one of my very first hearings licensure hearings 2 years ago, that there was a board that had anticipated a much larger number of people filing for licensure. It did not occur, yet they had spent the time and money, and I understand they kind of get a loan that first year from the reserves to get things going. And then they didn't have the number to keep to be cost-effective or cost-neutral. And so I was looking at, trying to see if, despite the fact that this comes under special revenues, if there are some ways to look at perhaps a more cost-effective way of running our boards as just part of the big budgetary discussion we're having this year. So if you have any comments, or I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Snyder? Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, I'll tell you that particular board did not go through our review process. No. To look at the finance piece is one of those questions. How do you support 32 people in a special board? That's not physically impossible or financially proven to do. And that is why some of these are subsets. They're advisory committees underneath the boards. And that is a good model for those that financially cannot afford it. I know the board of which you're referring to, and I believe they have a 5-year payback that they have to get to stand on their own. The fees that are generated, again, are somewhat controlled by the citizens directing our boards. We have a little bit of a challenge because our boards made up of citizens of the state tell us go forth and do this, and then we're an executive branch agency that has to support the governor's budget. And then also, we want to be good, prudent fiscal stewards of our, with our legislature as well. So that is the challenge. But I do think that we operate efficiently and have some board stories to tell, but for another chapter, another day.
Ms. Brecken.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, I think we should clarify that it's generally, I mean, it's almost 99% of the time not a board that seeks regulation of a particular profession. It's the profession that comes forward and wants either registration, licensure, whatever. In some instances, they might approach a particular board if it's related to the practice, and an example would be the Board of Medical Practice, because of the occupations that they regulate very much work at the direction of a physician. And so that's how some of them get placed in that way. The Board of Physical Therapy was actually formed statutorily a few years ago. They previously were regulated by the Board of Medical Practice, and at a given time the profession believed its education, its scope of practice, you know, had enough independence to it that they sought a separate board from the Board of Medical Practice.
We'll close Murphy and we'll come back.
Thanks, Mr. Chance. Just a follow up. Well, first for Ms. Brecken, can you tell me when nurses were first licensed in the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the Board of Nursing was formed in 1907, and it is actually not the oldest licensing board in the state. The Board of Pharmacy, the Board of Medical Practice, the Board of Veterinary Medicine, and the Board of Dentistry are actually older than that. There was a late 1800s.
Thank you, and Mr. Chair. Just one more, and this has to do with funding. The Administrative Services Unit, is that funded with special revenue or general fund dollars?
Mr. Snyder? Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the way that works is that we internally, with the 17 boards, figure out a formula to fund that. So it comes from the fees generated by the boards, but we've determined it's much better to have one accountant than to have 17 duplicate efforts. So it is used by fees generated by individual boards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more follow-up.
Go ahead.
In recent years, have any of the special revenue funds being generated by the licensed professionals gone into the general fund for deficit reduction?
Mr. Snyder. Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, yes. That was my graphic of our fees that we generate from license holders. We have spending authority, and if you don't increase that spending authority, there will be issues that happen that you generate more fees and more revenue, and your expenses they have to manage. And I think I'll defer to Ms. Brecken, maybe when you had to license so many additional people, how that occurred.
Ms. Brecken.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy. Sometimes there are instances where a board may have a windfall, unanticipated revenue, because we do, in the budget process, as Mr. Snyder said, the law says that we must generate revenue sufficient to cover our expenses, and it's sort of a balancing act that you go about. A number of years ago, there was a nurses' strike. The Board of Nursing at that time authorized approximately 5,000 additional nurses in a month's time to practice in Minnesota. That was a windfall to the board, and so that obviously adds to the surplus. There is, as you know, a nurse shortage that has occurred, and as a result of that, the schools in Minnesota have actually doubled their number of graduates by about 50%. So at the Board of Nursing, we at least have seen that the number of individuals, licensed individuals, has risen from 82,000 about 6 years ago to about 104,000 now. And so that obviously generates more revenue the more volume that you have. The legislature in this last session, to balance the budget this past year, actually it transferred, I believe, $3.4 million from the special revenue fund from licensure fees to the general fund to balance the budget. And that has occurred, at least in my history, at least three times in the last 10 years that has occurred.
Mr. Snyder. Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, and we do have two boards this year that are seeking fee decreases. that they would like to decrease their fees. And again, we have to go through the governor's budget that will be coming out and then go from there.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Representative Brent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To follow up further on that line of thought, then, have there been fee decreases in the past?
Mr. Schneider,
yes.
Or
okay.
Ms. Britton?
Mr. Chair, Representative, mm-hmm. Yes, there mm-hmm. have. The Board of Social Work actually did reduce their fees a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the Board of Dentistry did have a fee reduction some time ago. Mm-hmm. The Board of Nursing sought a fee decrease about 6 years ago to lower the renewal fee from $85 to $75
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. we were over-collecting,
mm-hmm.
And the legislature chose not to to pass that fee decrease at that time. But there have been others.
Rest on that.
Mr. Chair, when the special revenues were taken and moved to the general fund during deficits, was there a promise of repayment at those times? I ask this because in many cases there is. The airport runways, you know, schools, all kinds of other funds, there's a promise of repayment within a certain time period or eventually those kinds of
things. Yeah, I don't think there is, that okay. there was one. But Mr. Schneider might know a little bit.
No, Mr.
Okay.
Chair, Representative Bunn, no.
Okay.
And if I would have gone to health care, we would have all really been happy with that.
Okay. Well, just a comment and a few other questions. On a comment-wise, in terms of just state budgeting, management of special funds, dedicated fee-based operations like this, I personally believe this is inappropriate use of these funds to take them to the general fund, that if we establish dedicated fee-based systems like this, that they should remain within those systems or remitted back to the individuals through license reductions as a freestanding. You know, if it's freestanding, it should be freestanding. So this is of concern to me, and I hope that over the longer term we can work to remedy that situation, not only in this area but many other areas where this is done. Just a comment on that. You mentioned in terms of talking about the Make-Do boards that you added what you referred to as two general funded boards, Board of Barbers and Cosmetology and Emergency Medical Something Services. Did you mean the funds for those two boards come from the general fund, but then they began to take advantage of your centralized administrative services? That you meant literally the general fund?
Mr.
Okay.
Chair, Representative
right.
Bunn, that is exactly
okay.
it. They are funded through the general fund, but they take advantage of our collaborative services.
Okay. Another question has to do with, and this I would need help with staff, and maybe we don't now have the answer offhand. He indicated that they have conducted seven of these occupational license reviews at the Council of Health Boards since the inception of this section of 214.02 in 2001. Do we know how many total number of requests for registration or licensing changes we have received in that time period? Hence, what proportion of requests this committee have actually been sent for review to the Council?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, I do not know. I can try and check and get a number. I don't know if there's been a licensing subcommittee during that whole period of time or where the bill, you know, would have gone, but I can
right.
try and check and see.
I assume it probably wasn't all to this committee. It was the General Health and Human Services. Right. I asked this just because I was given a figure yesterday that in the last biennium this was 27 new licensing requests, not all of those to this committee, but there's other committees that share licensing issues. But I'm sure we had quite a number in the last biennium, just this committee that I recall. And I would very much appreciate seeing that information in terms of at least the ones that the Health and Human Services side has dealt with, how many of those were sent for review through this process.
Representative Bunn, while you going through that, I know that the Section 214 is there. At the same time, it doesn't prohibit this committee to have hearings on certain proposals, whether that commitment has been fulfilled or not. So at the same time as well.
Okay. Well, I understand it's at the discretion of the chair whether the review occurs. I just want to know how often it was exercised in the last 7 years.
Representative Ryan? Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for being tardy. I was in a car accident, unfortunately, on the way here.
Oh.
Well, and the poor gentleman who slammed into me, unfortunately, was, no, I need a car, worked for the Star Tribune, so he was on his way to hearing about the bankruptcy. So I apologize if this has been covered, but I was just out of curiosity, is there consistency as far as the fees that are charged by the boards, or what is the range of fees that each board charges?
Mr. Chair, Representative Root, that is really established by each of the boards. And they look at it as from an operational level. I think it's tried to not get into the dilemma that the one board did that was referenced by Representative Norton. But each of the fees are looked at by the board. And it's surprising. We have the Board of Podiatric Medicine, who is very small, 180, 190 individuals. They choose to have a higher renewal fee to maintain that autonomy. But it's the citizens that are the licensees that are spoken to have that autonomy. And there's debate there for us internally, too, at that cost.
Could you give us a range as far as low high that each that the fee varies from?
I would, Mr. Chair, Representative Root, I would think that nursing might have some of the lower annual fees.
Ms. Brecken?
Mr. Chair, Representative Root, that's correct. I believe that for nursing, the renewal fee is $85. It's every 2 years. And to my knowledge, the only occupations within the health boards that are lower than that are dental assistants and pharmacy technicians.
Mr. Chair, Representative Root, I believe physical therapists are $65 in that range, too. The high would be then the podiatric medicine, the doctors of DPM.
Thank you.
And Mr. Snyder, the fees are all requested by certain professions. Unlike other places where we demanded the amount of the fees, but the professions request their own fees.
Mr. Chair, Representative Root, again, the makeup of the board, typically it's half and half of the profession and of the public members. So when they're setting their own fees, what they will charge themselves, they do have great ownership there to try and make them fair. And I should mention that each of the boards have a blend statutory requirement for public members that are non-associated with the profession along with the professional members.
Any additional questions? Ms. Brecken.
Somebody just handed me a list of fees, and it looks like the range for the what would be the annualized renewal fee, because sometimes they may be for 2 years or 3 years or annually. It looks like the range is from $35 for dental assistance to $500 for licensed psychologists. And we can make that whole report available to you.
Please do so and provide that to all the members. We'll get that to all the members as well. So, Representative Bunn.
Chair, I have no further questions for them, but I have a number of questions and comments to pose to my colleagues on the committee for the sake of discussion around these issues.
Okay.
The appropriate
go
time.
Ahead. Sure.
Okay. Just some things that have come to mind. I was looking into some of these issues in terms of kind of the theory and practice behind licensing this summer, speaking to staff, speaking to others, the legislators who have the knowledge in this area. And in relation to our discussion here this morning, I have a couple questions and some comments. First of all, in addition to the question of how many license or registering or license or registering requests that have come before this portion, the Health and Human Service side that our committees, our higher-up committee would deal with, have come forward in the last number of years. We could take six or back to the beginning of this. How many of the maps have actually prepared the legally required report under 214.002, and you know that exists, and gave it to a committee chair, whoever the committee chair was at that time, the appropriate committee chair in the House and Senate. And then secondly, of those, both in the House and Senate, how many were requested for review by the Council of Health Boards? An initial exploration into this over the last few months indicates there's been kind of uneven practices around this, and I think the committee would benefit from clarification as to the intent of the law, which we're trying to get a handle of, but also the practices in both the House and Senate in terms of how committees have handled this. And addition levels of the issue of handling this is, you know, who determines whether such a report, I'm talking about the report, not their report, the report under 214.02, there's 11 questions there, have been answered sufficiently or not, whether they're done with their report, you know, whether...
I believe President Van Rie determined that.
Well, that leads to the next question. And my knowledge in the 2 years I've been here, the committee's never seen these reports except one that I know of. And in that one instance, it was handed out by the group involved. I think the physical therapist actually passed out either the 11-question report or the big report that you all did the read on to all of us on the committee. The other ones, I don't believe, to my recollection, that we have seen the report. So they have gone to chairs before your time and not, to my knowledge, been part of the deliberation of the committee. For example, I recall specifically in terms of one of the issues last session, I spent 5 hours on a Sunday afternoon pouring through the evidence on both sides of the issue, pro and con, and there was no such report. I only saw a report from that group 2 weeks ago when I understood one existed and I asked if they could give it to me. So why I didn't have it, you know, last year when we were delivering is another question. So it doesn't state in the law that the committee has to see the report. It doesn't state in the law that the report has to be entered into the record anywhere or kept in a file anywhere for historical purposes. These are things I would suggest if we think this is a good piece of law we need to tighten up. But at minimum, I'd like, you know, to know if determine whether reports are being done on time, whether we've always received them, whether they, and a process for adequately determining, you know, for us to determine whether they've been questions yet adequately or not. Then there's the question of, I can put these in writing later and email them to you if you want me to. What criteria is used by our chairs ongoing to determine which of these are then forwarded to the Council of Health Board with a request for review. And then that leads to the next question of whether or not the process the Council of Health Board and the questions they came up to over these years are the kind of information we need or not, or there's additional information. Even on a bigger question level is we have a case here where the group who's applying for the further regulation, registration, or licensing is the group who's preparing the initial report and answering the questions. This is not an unbiased source of information around these issues. It concerns me, and this is not the only area I've seen in state government so far where this is done, that the group advocating for is the primary source of information. And I would want us to possibly explore in this committee whether this can be redone in some way so we have a objective or more objective or multiple inputs of information so we have better information to answer these questions. And then there's the question of whether the all the work and time, and I heard it cost $2,500, I heard suggested when Mr. Snyder met Toss earlier this week, he happens to be constituent, so he called me up as well. the time and effort they have put in kind of voluntarily into this effort is worth the marginal value of, you know, the report. Not, I haven't seen your report yet, but whether it's, we should be asking them to do this kind of work, whether they're the appropriate body to do the work. So I think there's a number of important questions here of how we have set up a process for licensing discussion and decision making in the state and whether it's currently adequate. And then let me close with and throw out the discussion for you to respond to, you know, why this is important. when you move to non-regulation, to registration, to certification, or to licensing, and particularly when you move to the highest level of licensing, this is a business climate issue. This is a labor workplace environment issue, and this is a health and safety issue. That's what this is all about. But these decisions about licensing affect prices, wages, employment levels, freedom of choice of consumers, freedom of choice of workers, you know, rights of employers. They affect the ability to have reciprocity when spouses and people move across states, whether they can find adequate employment in a new state. There are a lot of economic issues in labor markets and business climate that are affected by these decisions, not just the parties we might see squabbling before us over a piece of turf. There's much larger effects throughout the entire economy and through our state. So that's why it's important that we do this in a thoughtful, conscientious way. And I think there have been attempts to put, as Exhibit in 214, things into the law to help facilitate that thoughtful process to address some of those issues. But whether it's achieving those goals or not, my initial reading of Chapter 214 and some of the other documents is that we haven't quite achieved those goals of a good process yet for our state, and there's more work to be done in that area. So I throw out to my colleagues what that more discussion and work might consist of going forward.
Rep. Bunn, I think we're open to any suggestion. If you have some ideas, I think it's appropriate to put it in a draft form, and we'll give a hearing and we'll give consideration to, and if it needs to be fixed, I think there's some hearing the testimony, I think there's some work, there's some pieces that I want to pursue on as well. Okay, Representative.
A question of clarification and a closing comment. When you say draft form, are you suggesting a memo with a draft of ideas for a discussion, or you would like to see a bill drafted?
I prefer to see legislation.
Okay.
I don't think we want to waste the committee's time by brainstorming.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Unless we have written registration.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Final comment, because you said specific ideas. Besides the specific idea, we have in Minnesota, at the Humphrey Institute and the Industrial Relations School, one of the top, if not the top expert in the country, on the theory and practice of licensing, who's written probably the main book that people read in this country on licensing of occupations. He's still active in this field, it would be of interest to me to have him come do a presentation to this committee on the theory and practice of licensing, but specifically on where Minnesota stands relative to other states in its approach to licensing and licensing occupations, and maybe perhaps even do that as a joint experience with some members of other committees who are involved in licensing of occupations. That's just a specific situation.
Very good. Okay. Today could have been a good day for that, but with all the a lot of the groups in this room, I expect that all groups follow the Section 214, and as part of that, your report on Section 214 will be shared and will be part of the hearing as well. In regards to the board, each time we request the board to convene on an individual profession, it costs us money. And from what I could tell, there is a large amount of licensing bills popping up, and the chair will decide and balance that with when is it appropriate to convene the board on certain profession, and I encourage the members to share with me their concerns and when bills pop up. So, are there any additional comments? All right. Well, Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chair, I hope that you would share with us your criteria today or in the future that you will use in determining which ones get reviewed. And secondly, I think in terms of money involved, it's not general fund money. It is these special fund money that's raised by these groups. Moreover, we saw at least one example discussed earlier where if we had had this more thorough review, we possibly wouldn't have gone forward with licensing because we would have known that financially they weren't able to support an independent board, or at least we would have suggested a different approach. So while it does cost some money, and we certainly should weigh that of this group's organization, there also may be long-term consequences that have a financial impact as well.
Okay. Thank you for coming. Meeting adjourned.